Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Trek actor who also portrayed the character of Andrew Sims in the fifth season of the 90s television series Sisters, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
Oh, my God.
And myself. Your favorite Eternal Ensign Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/the Delta Flyers.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us for open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
You were wondering what the heck I was leading up to. You're like, what is he talking about?
That is very funny that you pull it. I was like, Andrew, whatever the name was that you
Andrew
said.
Sims.
And I was like, wait a minute, what? I did that. I could not recall. And it's so funny you mentioned Sisters.
Yeah.
Because when I played tennis with Jim Conway recently.
Did he direct that?
Oh, no. But he did direct Sisters. I think he produced it as well. Or he worked at the studio.
Oh, my goodness.
Because he brought that up. And I was like, oh, my God, I did that show. And so we were just talking about Sisters,
that's
me and Jim
funny.
Conway.
Yeah.
Which is one of those like obscure little soapy.
Yeah.
You know, 80s, 90s shows.
Yeah. Were your scenes with Swoozie Kurtz, Cilla Ward, Julianne Phillips, Patricia Callumbur? Like who were they with? Did you remember?
I don't remember.
Oh my goodness.
I don't even remember the story. I remember
Were you a love interest? Were you a love interest?
I think I was like a temporary, like an episodic love interest, potential love interest.
Okay.
I think there was a daughter character. One of the sisters had a daughter.
Right.
Who was on a date with this. I think I was maybe only in one or two scenes. Like I went and met them at their house.
Yeah.
And then went out to a restaurant with them. And we filmed it at Warner Brothers in the commissary at night.
Oh, nice.
I do remember filming it in the commissary because I was like,
that served as the
crazy.
Restaurant.
Crazy.
Right. That was the restaurant.
They made it. And eventually, when I'm directing and producing Chuck at Warner Brothers a few years later,
or
10, 15 years later.
Yeah.
We use that commissary all the time for restaurants.
That's insane. So
every time I'd go in there with Chuck to film a scene, I'd go, oh, I remember the first time when I did Sisters and I was in this
commissary.
We did the same thing.
Yeah. Did Paramount rent out their commissary to TV shows as well? I don't recall.
I think
that.
They did. But, you know, on Star Trek, we never had contemporary, like,
all of our
sets.
Stuff.
We couldn't. It was very rare that we went to, like, the back lot to film or anything, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
But we did have our Christmas party at the commissary for Star Trek one year.
We did.
Last season.
Yes, when I couldn't, when my nightclub connections fell through.
That's right.
It was all set up. And then we got bumped because someone else came in with more money. So I was like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? Because I got us a deal on the Garden of Eden was what it was.
Yeah,
so
that Christmas party.
Yeah,
was kind of the cast gift to the crew.
That's where it was. Yes, correct.
We wanted to have something that where it was really fun for everybody at Christmas, and they could bring their kids and dance, and we ended up at the commissary.
That's
and
right.
It was great, and we ended up getting that inflatable laser tag thing for the kids. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. Yeah,
that was fun.
Yeah, so it was a good time. It was a good plan time. B backup plan.
Yeah.
So yes. Okay. All right, so this week's episode is Survival Instinct. We just came off of watching a very tense-filled Equinox Part 1 and 2 with a highly questionable morality story, basically.
Yes.
Ethics, morality involved. And now we're on to Survival Instinct. So
Season 6, Garrett.
Season 6, man. Second episode of Season 6. I can't believe we've already come this far. It's amazing.
I can't either. I really can't.
Yeah.
I feel like in this podcast journey, I'm having similar feelings to when we did the show. Because I remember when we came into season 6, we started to go, oh, we're on the downhill side.
Like
we kind of knew.
We saw the finish line.
Once we got a couple seasons in, we felt pretty confident we were going to make it the typical seven that that was what Paramount wanted out of the Star Trek shows back then, seven seasons.
Right.
So we had a lot of confidence in those middle years that, oh yeah, we got years of this. But then by season six, we were all kind of coming in going, oh yeah, this is the downhill. We got to start thinking about plans, future plans.
Yeah. Cause that was season six is that 99 or 2000 at that point, maybe 2000,
probably 99 and 2000 over spread. Yeah.
Alrighty. So let's go watch this and we'll be right back with our recap and discussion of the episode Survival Instinct. Ravi and I are back from watching Survival Instinct. And
yes, we are. Yeah,
you were right. Ron Moore wrote
this. I can't believe it.
And I was right on my backup, Terry Wendell. So I got
That's crazy. That's right. Yeah.
So we both kind of got
Terry Wendell. Mm-hmm. Terry, I looked up. He ended up directing like 10 episodes of our show.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because he directed 10 of our show.
Yeah.
One of Enterprise. And then nothing else again. He's done. He went back to visual effects.
No way. Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So our show was really the, you know, the only directing except for one episode of Enterprise that he ever did, which is kind of interesting. I'm curious why. It's also interesting that I didn't know when I looked at his visual effects credits. Maybe I knew back when we did the show, but I had forgotten that he was in the VisFX department on Masters of the Universe.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So Michael Westmore, Terry Wendell, all these
a lot
people.
Of our crew, a lot of people.
Anthony DeLongis, my old
Anthony,
teacher.
Yeah.
And also, what was Anthony's
Remember
name
Cooper,
on our
the
show?
The redheaded electrician. He was the lighting guy. I think it was Brian Cooper or Coop.
Yeah.
Used to call him.
What about
he Cooper? Was on Masters? He
what?
He got, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Coop was running the Voyager football pool for many, many years after we wrapped the show. So Coop and I stayed in touch for a while.
Oh, that's funny.
It's a small world. It's a Masters small reunion, world. Is what it is.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Okay. So written by Ron Moore, season six, he's in show running for a brief moment.
Yeah.
Directed by Terry Wendell. Let's talk about our guest stars real quick.
Sure.
Guest stars, we had Vaughn Armstrong again. I mean, he's, you know, he's
he's another one of Berman's faves, I guess.
Oh,
you know, he's a workhorse. He is a workhorse.
My he's goodness. Done a ton of things outside of Star Trek, but he has done probably as much, if not more, than any other actor in terms of different roles on different shows and different movies.
But I will say in this episode, this is probably the least amount of prosthetics he's had on his face, because usually he's covered.
Well, on Enterprise, he was a human. He
was a human?
He was a general or something.
Oh, look at that.
He probably did a dozen episodes of Enterprise.
Okay. Yeah. I love Vaughn Armstrong, by the way.
Vaughn is great. Most people know him. So I'm not going to go through his whole resume, but we'll talk about his very first job.
I would love to know that.
1977.
Oh, my
God. He did an ABC weekend special called The Gold Bug. And those were Saturday morning live action little stories. I actually did an ABC weekend special called Jeter Mason and the Magic Headset.
Later, though, not in 1977.
Not 1977. No,
when you were 13.
Like 84.
And I was,
it was probably, 84, 85, something like that.
Wow, look at that.
Yes, the gold bug. That was his auspicious beginnings.
All right.
And then we have Bertilla Domus. And what I didn't realize, so Bertilla was, she played 3 of 9, or Marika Wilkara was her
that's right.
Individual name, but her Borg name was 3 of 9.
3 of 9,
Bertilla was born in Cuba. Her very first job was on a telenovela called Angelica Mi Vida. She played Marta Machado. So a soap opera.
Angelica, my life is what that
means. Angelica Mi Vida.
Mi Vida, my life. Okay.
But here's the crazy thing. I watched this episode, didn't make any connection because she had prosthetics on basically the whole time.
Right.
What I didn't realize is I worked with her after Voyager 2 times I directed her.
You directed her twice after Voyager?
Yes, I directed her on a series called The Nine, where she was a recurring character.
Oh my goodness.
It was about bank robbers on ABC.
Okay.
And then I directed her on a show called The Red Band Society, which was about children's hospital ward.
Wow.
And she played the mom of one of the kids. And I directed a big episode with her in that. So,
and she didn't bring up anything about
she
Voyager
didn't bring when... it up. I didn't bring... She probably didn't make the connection
either.
Because
I'm sure she didn't.
I had no scenes with her in this episode.
That's true. It was all
and yeah, and I was a director, not an actor. So I don't know why she would have. But
yeah,
Bertilla has worked a lot. And I've worked with her now
twice.
On other shows.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Tim Kelleher was 4 of 9, or Pachan was his individual name, but his board name, 4 of 9. His very first job was in 1988 in a horror film called Graveyard Shift 2.
Okay.
That was his beginning.
I wonder, because that's not a very common last name. And the only other person that I know who has that name is the CEO of Southwest Airlines. I wonder if there's any relation.
They're probably related somewhere. I think Tim Kelleher was from the Bronx. He's from New York. So
okay.
And I think he's married now to a very successful author, writer, Canadian writer.
So. Oh, wow.
Nice. Yeah. And I think Tim has also written some books, I noticed as well.
Okay.
We could talk about these actors in, you know, forever,
but
his first job was Graveyard Shift 2, the classic horror film.
I love it.
We also had Scarlett Palmer's in the show. Mm-hmm. Love when she's in the show. And we had another actor named Jonathan Breck, played the dying Borg. He was the one that had that moment where Seven, you know, he died in her arms and looking in her eyes. And Jonathan Breck played that. His first job was in 1998. So he just started acting right before this.
Yes.
Before this episode. 1998, a TV movie called I Married a Monster.
Huh.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And that was with Richard Berge, I think, and Susan Walters.
Mm.
Classic TV. I've worked with both of those actors before.
Yeah.
Jonathan Breck, there you go. There's our actors.
Okay. Well, thank you for that information. Let us now do our poetry synopsis. Okay, here's my haiku for survival instinct. Here we go.
Yes, sir.
Ex-Borg drones still linked. Tom and Harry kick rackets. Not much time, but free.
Oh, that's nice.
Sad too.
And it got Tom and Harry in there, which is
it did. That was
maybe my favorite part of this episode.
That scene hands so down good. The best scene in this episode was Tom and Harry.
I'm not gonna lie, it was
I agree with you. And even if I wasn't if I didn't play Harry and you didn't play Tom, I would still say that was the best scene.
It was a good scene.
Yeah.
It was funny.
It was wonderful.
Here we go with our limerick synopsis.
Yes, please.
For Survival Instinct.
Mm-hmm.
Seven is visited by her past collective. Becoming individuals is their only objective. Tom and Harry broke some bones. Seven learned to link the drones. Just surviving or thriving is actually very subjective.
Thinking man's limerick there.
Yes,
I like that.
Yes.
Huh, good job. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Alrighty. Let's jump right into this.
Right in. First scene, we get this aerial shot of some planet. We don't know what's going
on. Very lush, though.
Very lush planet. Yeah, jungly. We see a Borg sphere flying into the atmosphere, and it crashes and explodes in the distance. It was a cool shot.
Yeah, I like it.
We cut to the wreckage in the jungle. Yeah. We see some Borg searching through the wreckage.
Yeah.
And then we reveal 7 of 9 in full Borg.
Yes.
Seven's in full Borg.
Bet she loved that.
Oh, I bet she hated that.
Yes.
They,
cynical.
They all gather up near this injured drone and assess the situation. And their, you know, their ship is, you know, in pieces.
Yes.
And their link has been severed from the collective.
Yes.
And they talk in unison, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, Von Armstrong and Bertilla and they and Jerry, they all talk in unison saying no directional coordinates available.
Yeah.
And it's you know, they're still kind of talking with each other, but they say they're not linked. They don't know where they are.
Right.
And my first thought was, wow, they're all talking. Normally when we see drones, they never speak.
That's correct.
Like usually it's, you know,
it's just like
Jerry talking and they're silent.
Right. They're like automatons.
Yeah. So already it was like, oh, these are going to be characters because they don't usually write lines for Borgs unless they're going to be part of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they all assess the situation. They realize, or Seven realizes, that part of the sphere is going to explode. So they decide to skedaddle and get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
We jump to a captain's log.
When they skedaddle, they drag that injured drone.
Yeah, they take the injured drone with them. That's right.
Because that's going to be important later.
Mm-hmm.
We get a captain's log.
Yeah. Now we have a captain's log from Janeway saying that we have docked at the Marconian outpost. And Janeway's agreed to mutual visits. So basically, it's sort of like open house on Voyager. Open ship. It's like, come on down, take a look.
It's a party, cultural exchange. She talks about this cultural exchange.
Yeah, there's so many people.
By the way, on the aerial shot, the space shot, when we see Voyager docked, I thought, oh, we're at a space station. And Ron Moore just took over the show from DS9, a space station.
I was like, look at that connection.
Oh, I wonder if this story came out of, he was in the in the headspace of, space stations.
Yes.
People always have to come and.
Right.
And I don't know.
And this was his segue into Voyager from DS9 to Voyager. That's interesting. Yeah. But also, when you do see Voyager docked, it's got that lovely sunset glow.
Oh yeah, beautiful lighting.
It's that sunset lighting, that golden hour. Yeah, it's really, it looks really cool, definitely. So anyway, in this captain's log, other than knowing that, you know, the ship is open to anybody, she also notes that Tuvok has objected to the fact that there are so many visitors on the ship. He's not happy about that. Mm-hmm. And now we cut over to the bridge, and it is so I've never seen the bridge that crowded. There's people everywhere.
And by the way, I thought, this is our bridge. Like, I've been onto the bridge of ships before because I've been able to film on them or whatever.
Yeah.
They're very careful about the bridge. Like, do not touch, do not, you know.
Right.
And here we've got like 50 unknown aliens just bouncing around. Yeah. I'm with Tuvok on this.
What are we doing? I agree. I mean, there's field trips going on left and right. And come on.
Yeah.
But then we see Chakotay walking through the crowd. And the minute I saw him holding that, I go, oh, that thing. I remember that thing. Yes, that prop, which evidently, you know, he talks about it being super heavy, but, you know, it was plastic and you can tell it looks like it's plastic too. So, but he's trying to make his way through and it's so awkward. It's falling all over the place. He finally makes his way to the captain's ready room and enters, where we find Janeway being somewhat devoured by this plant in a way. It's sitting on her desk. It's all over her. It's in her hair. It's on her face. And she just, she can't even, but the thing is, she's in a great mood. She's
got good energy.
Her energy is totally, she's happy. She doesn't mind that the plant's sort of grabbing at her. And Chakotay says, look what I've got, this really awkward gift from the Kinbori.
The thing that Chakotay was carrying reminds me of, like, you know, sometimes you see in people's yards, those wind arts.
Wind chime?
It's like, it's like you put something in your yard and it's got different things that will rotate around at different levels.
Yes.
It reminded me of
one of those.
Like, everything's turning and what, you know, but it's all connected to the center post or something. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah. That or some really weird alien menorah, like, you know, the Jewish candles.
Yeah.
I was like, what is happening here? But, so this is a gift from the Kinbori delegation, and evidently it's used in some type of ritual game that they play. So then Janeway and Chakotay banter for a second, then Tuvok enters, and he's got this look on his face where he's very annoyed, and he has a pad, and on this pad he hands to Janeway is his security report, which has all these infractions, and the people, things have been pilfered, you know, things are broken, things are stolen. Yes,
there's some
missing.
Stolen things, like the it's got some damage to the ship's scanner relays.
Yeah.
Crew members' personal items have been taken.
Yeah. And Janeway's still very, very relaxed about it.
Yeah,
she's not still that big of a deal.
Still thinks this is a good idea. By the way, she says to Chakotay, she's got some She says, we should give them a gift. And she hands Chakotay, it looks like a binder with like a technical manual. I was like, what is that? Like a manual for something? Is she giving away
our ship works?
What is that? Is that her journal?
I was gonna say that it was a signed script.
It looks like a signed script.
Yeah.
I was gonna say maybe it was a, you know, maybe the whole crew of Voyager got together and made a calendar. It was like a firefighter's calendar that we posed for them, you know, or something. Maybe it was a Voyager.
So did I pose seductively with my clarinet in one?
Yes, I think
one
you
month
did.
Like that, where I was holding
I think
it?
You did.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And then you're leaning up against your what is it? Your
leaning 57, up against the con.
Yeah.
I'm man spreading.
No. The car that you're working on. What kind of car was that? What was that?
There was a truck
Camaro,
and there was a Camaro in
there. Yeah, the Camaro. Yeah. So maybe you're kind of like, you know, you're leaning up against your Camaro.
Camaro, yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah, I like
in that. Our calendar, the Voyager calendar that we give them as a gift, because that's going to really impress them.
They'll love that. So, and every time Janeway says, well, it's not a big deal, Tuvok goes, there's another page. And she goes, yeah. Oh, okay. Well, these are a little bit more serious, but I'm still fine with it.
She's
there's
fine
yet
with
another
it.
Page. Yeah, so it keeps on going.
Tuvok finally says, well, I am pleased that you're pleased.
But the way he says it is just so opposite of how he truly feels. Oh, yes. So dry. Yep.
I love at the very end, she says, Chakotay, it's got me by the hair.
Yeah.
Cut over and she's like tangled up in the plant. It's a funny scene. I like the energy of the scene as we started. It was good.
It is. And all I could think about with that plant basically was like a cat. You know, cats are just all over the place. And that's what I felt. That's what I felt.
Nice.
All right. Astrometrics. Mm-hmm. And we have 7 of 9 busy completing her analysis of the station's power conversion matrix. And little Naomi is there saying, you know, it's now 12:45 at lunch. You said we would have lunch. Yeah. And Seven's like, no, this is going to take me for a while. Take me a while to finish this analysis.
All I could think of when I watched these scenes with Seven and Scarlett Palmer's and Jerry Ryan.
Yeah.
Jerry's in like 7-inch heels and she's already 6 feet tall, basically. Yeah. And Scarlett, I forgot how young she was. Like,
yeah,
something about her in this scene with these scenes with Jerry, the height difference is insane. In fact, there's a later scene in the hallway where they had to put the camera down real low.
Yeah, in order
to be able to hold.
That's right.
The two of them walking in the hallway. I was like, that's really low. But then I went,
they placed that on the ground, basically.
Yeah, she's 2 feet tall and Jerry's 6-7 feet tall with her heels.
Yeah.
But it's cute. I love these scenes. It brings out good stuff in Seven with Scarlett there.
Naomi says to Seven, you promised. And at that point, Seven relents and says, fine, we'll go. Yeah. We now catch up with them in the corridor, which is still filled with these guests everywhere.
It's a little much, it's
sort of like, really, guys, you know, let's find like a cargo bay to kind of spread out in a little bit, because this is
ridiculous. Felt like a nightclub, like you're trying to get down the hall of a of
you know
like
they
a,
were in know, line for Club Tuvok.
Club
I know that they were waiting and there was a bouncer there and very exclusive, so
that's what it was.
But clearly they're in the way, and Naomi says excuse me multiple times, no one listens. Seven now quickly barks out the order, stand aside, and the sea of individuals just parts.
I gotta say, when she says stand aside, the camera did what's called a snap zoom, so they were on a long lens on a zoom, so you see all this foreground, and then she says stand aside, and as everybody freezes and moves back, the camera quickly snapped out into a wide shot. I gotta say, I didn't like that shot.
Okay.
It's one of those shots. It would have been stronger on a cut for me. If you had been in tight on Seven going, stand out of the way, and cut hard to a wide shot with everybody moving back.
Yeah.
Would have felt more like our show.
Yeah.
The snap zoom where it kind of whooshes out. It feels like a 1972 low budget film or something. I didn't like that shot.
You didn't buy it.
I gotta be honest.
You. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, be honest. That's what you're here for. Okay.
Okay. Anyway.
All right. Good point. We head to mess hall, and right off the bat, there's again 1,000 people in mess hall. We see Neelix for the first time. Neelix says, I'm sorry. there's no more marsupial surprise. And all I could think about was kangaroos being cooked. It was like, oh my goodness.
Everyone was really sad. Even our Voyager crew members, they were so upset. Were so disappointed. They hung their heads. More marsupial surprise.
Oh my gosh.
It seems like this group of people are the only ones that like Neelix's cooking so far in the series. They seem to like it a lot more than normal. So,
okay. Yes. We catch up with Seven and Naomi. They're sitting down and they're eating their food. Naomi spots an alien.
Do you think they were eating marsupial surprise?
I don't think so.
Did they get lucky and get that the one dish that Neelix is so good at that everybody's.
Yeah, I looked at their platter. It didn't look like there was any kangaroo on there. No.
No marsupial surprise for Naomi and Seven. Oh, well.
Marsupial surprise. Is that something that we could come up with in our store?
A dish.
Marsupial surprise jerky or something like that? Yeah. I don't know. Okay.
I don't know.
So little Naomi notices an alien and says to Seven, that's a Shavolian, right? And then Seven says, yes, that is. And then little Naomi says, species 521. And then Seven kind of gives her a little heck there. She says, your mother would not approve of this. And I don't approve of you emulating the Borg and learning Borg designations. And then Seven talks about not enjoying crowds. She's not happy about being there. Mm-hmm. And so she's done with lunch.
Well, she says, I don't enjoy crowds. It reminds her of the Borg collective.
Yes.
And that's kind of important that she's... You know, that we establish that she's, her point of view now about the Borg is she doesn't want, you know, Naomi to be a part of it. She doesn't, it's not a good memory.
Correct. Yeah. So when they're about to leave, an alien walks up and asks Seven if she is Seven of Nine. She says, yes.
Vaughn Armstrong. Spoiler alert.
Vaughn Armstrong. And then the other thing I was thinking is everyone in that group was part of her nine people in that small, you know, Unimatrix one. Wouldn't she have recognized Vaughn? You know, I mean, I would, I'm sorry, if I was part of that.
Well, we recognize Vaughn because we've seen him at shows and conventions. Yeah. I wasn't in a collective with him. So yeah, you're right.
I think Seven should, the fact that I would have liked to have seen Seven had a little bit of like deja vu, like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I don't know where to place you, but you are in my memory. I don't know how. Some of that, but it was almost like this was a complete stranger. She's like, yes, I'm Seven. How may I help you? And he's like, well, how about this? And he opens up this case filled with Borg synaptic relays. And then she has this rush of memories and emotions. Everything starts flowing through her. And she's wondering, like, where did you get this? And he says, oh, I acquired them from a trader from Orendal 5. And I thought, you being a former drone, that you'd be interested in these. And she says, yes, I'll take these. Captain Janeway will reimburse you for this. No problem. And she doesn't even give him like an invoice or anything like that. She just walks away with the, you know,
he must trust her. Yeah.
Very much so. And so she's gone and she doesn't even, does she even say goodbye to Naomi? I don't even think she does.
I don't think so.
Just cruises.
Naomi.
No, she stays there because she asks Vaughn, what is your name? There. He doesn't say Vaughn and he doesn't say two, which is his designation.
Yes.
He just looks at her and then walks away. And little Naomi says, well, how rude of you.
How rude. Yeah.
In another part of the mess hall, they now, too, has some type of telepathic conversation.
Yeah, you think it's telepathic at first, and then it cuts to another woman. But because it was Vaughn Armstrong, I knew it had to be some Borg. They still had Borg in them.
Right. So we see the other two members of the Borg, Unimatrix 1 that's survived. It's number 3 and 4 that are somewhere else on the ship, clearly. Yeah. And now they're talking about, okay, she's going to study them. Her regeneration alcove is in Cargo Bay 2. We should prepare stage 3. So they have a plan. Clearly, there's some type of Ocean's 11 going on with these three. We don't know what it is yet. And now we have a bit of a flashback back to the planet surface. And 4 of 9 says that they shouldn't be desecrating the body of this drone. It's against the will of Brothera. And then the question, one of the other drones says, Brothera, who is that?
Who's
yeah, Brothera? Yeah. Vaughn answers, supernatural deity worshipped by species 571. Mm-hmm. And four says, I am a member of species 571. Two then asks four, wait, you just said I. Do you consider yourself to be an individual? And now this is the beginnings of
yes.
all the little
seven, fish. And seven's like, we're not, she's not a part of this. Seven's going, we're not
out. She's
we're
like,
not individuals. Yeah. We're a collective.
Yeah. She's like, you shut up. No. You know, and she's fighting it every way. But these mm-hmm. other three drones are exploring their individuality now, the beginnings of their old individuality. Mm-hmm. So good scene. We jump over to Cargo Bay 2, where we have a scene with Torres and Seven, and Torres is there to help.
Yeah, which is very rare. We don't see B'Elanna helping Seven.
And not in the cargo bay. She's usually in engineering, if you see the two of them, right? But I also have to note, we have, once again, Torres and her curly hair. Maybe she's still thinking about Burke or something.
Maybe.
Your
maybe
favorite guy, Burke. So, you know, basically, Torres says, look, it's just a standard Borg synaptic relay. Seven goes, no, there's something else going on here. There's more with this. I was overwhelmed.
Feelings,
images, memories, sounds. And Torres says, well, maybe it's just nostalgia that you experience. Sentimental feelings about the past. And Seven snaps at her.
She's really,
I don't know
rude.
What that is. Yeah, she's really.
Yes, I understand nostalgia.
Yeah.
It's not nostalgia. And B'Elanna's like, okay.
Yeah,
all right, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then Seven stops her before she leaves, and
she apologizes.
Kind of apologizes, and B'Elanna says, "You know, you may not have nostalgia, but you've got some kind of strong feelings about this."
We jump to mess hall.
Yep,
and we have the 3X drones are discussing whether or not to proceed with their plan. Four is hesitant. Four thinks,
and they're speaking telepathically. So it's another at the beginning. Yep. Another reminder that they are connected.
They're still
somehow
connected.
But they don't have the Borg, just to be clear.
Right.
They've got scars all over their face and things, but you don't see any of the Borg technology.
The implants are all gone, exactly.
Yeah.
And they are clearly not connected with the collective, the hive.
Yeah.
The hive mind is not there, but yet they can still hear each other. So it's a mystery. We don't know why. And we jump to back to Cargo Bay 2, and Seven is asking the computer to begin a multipolar analysis, and it will take over 5 hours. So I guess that is her cue to, I'll catch a few Zs, have a little regeneration.
Go regenerate, which is what our ex-Borg are waiting for, her to get in the alcove. So she goes to regenerate. We cut back to the mess hall, and these guys sense it because they've tapped in to the internal sensors. So they sense it.
Yeah,
they've rerouted the internal sensors. We go to the
bridge.
We go to the bridge, and Tuvok gets an alert. Like
he
something's
up. Yeah.
Something's up, and our security system is alerting us of something.
Yeah.
We cut to the turbo lift inside the 3X drones. 2, 3, and 4. They're riding in the turbo lift.
Aren't they riding with other people?
Yeah. Some other people are in there at first. Then the door opens. The other people get out, and as it shuts. Three says pause or halt
hold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she stops the turbo lift and then they reach up as if they're going to go climb into the guts of the ship and do something. We don't know. So they start reaching up to climb out.
Yeah.
We go back to the bridge and now and Chakotay is approaching Tuvok's station and he says, you know, Tuvok, what's up? What's going on? And Tuvok responds, there was a power fluctuation in the security grid.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're dialing down on that.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
We go into cargo bay and our three X drones, our 2, 3, and 4. We haven't gotten their names yet.
Right.
And I'm going to call them 2, 3, and 4 because I can't remember their real names.
Let's do it.
They climb out of some kind of panel in the cargo bay.
Yeah.
Start creeping over to 7. back on the bridge, Chakotay's looping Janeway into this. Says yeah. They have a security breach. They don't know exactly where yet.
Right.
And then we go back into cargo bay, and they are 2, 3, and 4 are beginning this process. Whatever they're going to do to 7, yeah. We don't really know yet. But they take this interlink module and stick it up on her alcove, so they're beginning the interlink process of some kind. And then 4 is like, I don't know if we should be doing this.
Yeah.
And 3 says, you know what? If we fail, we will never become individuals. So right. Now we're starting to figure out like what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
We saw in the flashback that they were beginning to think like individuals, mm-hmm. but it hasn't happened yet. So right. Clearly they need 7 for some reason.
Yep.
I like that they have to take all these dramatic pauses and get consensus. They keep saying, yeah, you know, like getting heated with each other. And then they stop and there's silence and they go, we have consensus. Yeah. Like they've heard each other, yeah. You know, the and three of them are connected.
Yeah. And I guess they can't physically proceed with any plan unless they say consensus and they all agree.
Must be a lot of like talking going on that we don't hear in the episode.
Right.
Like, because they say later on, like, it's nonstop talking. Like, I just want silence.
Yeah. Yeah. 2 injects 7 with his Borg tubules into her neck. They start realizing that 7 is beginning to regain consciousness. She does regain consciousness, and she is not happy. She fights them off. She knocks Von Armstrong away. The other two try to grab her. But at that moment, Tuvok and a security detail run in and phaser RX drones and knock them unconscious. And they're down on the ground. I think
dramatic moment with Tuvok and 7 at the end. I got to say, like when 7 wakes up and the little fight sequence that happens there and Tuvok coming in with the shooting him, it was not a very dynamic action sequence to me.
Right. Yeah.
It felt
very
like
static and it didn't move much.
Yeah. It didn't move much. It was,
I agree.
It was a pretty quick and dirty.
Yep.
Not very dynamic. There was no sense of, oh my gosh, 7's in trouble because she, you know, opened her eyes, took all three of them out.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah. But Terry could have been running out of time too. This could have been the last shot of the day. And he's like, look, let's just get this done. You know, this was my original plan. Scrap it. Let's go ahead and shoot it this way quicker.
Yeah. Yeah. So, for sure.
Yeah. And now do we have flashback on planet surface?
Yeah. We go back to planet surface.
I thought this was some type of alien gazelle that they had.
Interesting.
I thought it was an animal. Not until I, you know, kept rewinding it, did I realize. And then I read the script also online. This is a piece of the dead drone that they pick out. Yes.
That's disgusting.
It is. It is absolutely disgusting. So,
because he does say something like, what does he say? Biomatter is ready.
Biomatter. Yeah.
The biomatter is ready.
They didn't say we are now about to eat six of nine. They didn't say that.
Oh,
they
just that's said, gross. I didn't know that. I figured it was an animal too.
I thought it was too. And then I read the script and it was like, yeah, they're taking a piece of the deceased drone, basically. And I was like, ugh, yuck. Anyway, three says, this reminds me of a bird I ate. And then all of a sudden, all of them start having these memories of their past.
Yeah, they're having all these individual memories.
She remembers seven her name.
Seven even remembers. Yes. She says, I remember being very afraid, which is important, actually.
That is also important. Correct.
She says, I remember being afraid. Three remembers her name. She says, I'm Marika. Marika Wilcara. Four remembers his name, Pachan. Two remembers Lansor is his name. Is it Lansor?
I think. Yeah, Lansor.
And they all start.
Is it Lancer? Lancer.
Lansor.
You want to say it the way Tuvok says it?
That's yes, fine. I pull a full.
You pull full Tuvok?
Yes, I do.
Okay, Lansor.
But they do all say that they hate the Borg, which is interesting.
Very much so, because they really haven't been detached from the collective that long, and immediately. We hate the Borg. They're
and
not
seven active. At that point. She's like, this is irrelevant data.
Yeah.
No more access of memory files. And she's getting heated here.
Yeah. No translation. Blasphemy. Irrelevant data was blasphemy from her to the rest of the drones.
Mm-hmm. Yes. She says no more access to the memory files. They do agree at this point. Okay, fine.
Yep.
So they're back. We think that, you know, things are back under control. In that flashback, we go to the sick bay.
Yeah, they're on the biobeds.
They're all, our two, three, and four are on the biobeds. Mm-hmm. The doctor's explaining that they had their Borg technology removed, but they had a very poor surgeon. Their internal organs have been damaged a bit. They've been disconnected from the collective for 3 or 4 months, he says. But they're still connected as a triad. So their brains are somehow acting as an interleak node for the three of them.
Yeah.
And which they don't understand.
What's also interesting is that on the biobeds, they're laying in order. Three's in the middle and four's in the last biobed. Yeah. So I was like, oh, isn't that cute? They're all in order.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
They wake up though. Janeway says, all right, let's try to find out what happened. How is this happening? Because the doctor doesn't understand why they're connected to each other. But they're not connected to the collective.
Correct.
So they wake them up. They tell Janeway that they want to be disconnected from each other, that they can't stop hearing each other's voices in their heads. And they describe being connected in the collective like white noise. I think Seven says that actually. Yeah.
If there's millions of voices, then that's like white noise. But then when you only have three, you hear every single word.
I thought that was an interesting way of describing it.
Mm-hmm.
We do learn in the scene that 8 years ago their vessel crashed,
right?
And they want to know how their subgroup was created. Seven ultimately says that maybe in her memory files, the key to understanding how this link was formed might be there, and that could show them how they could undo it. If Seven could go back in her memory files.
I think she also suggests she wants to examine the other X-Drone's memory files.
Yeah,
as well,
examine theirs. Yep. And you know, maybe in her memory files or in their memory files, they can go back. Mm-hmm. So she's willing to let them access her memory files in order to figure this all out. So
Seven takes our three X-Drones to cargo bay two. A data cable is plugged into the back of Four's head. And Seven says, are you ready? And Four is ready. Four says, yes. And Seven says, well, the data search is complete. Do you remember anything further? Four says, no. My last memory is of us standing around the campfire. And Seven says, well, that's interesting. The data files in your cortical processor appear to be intact. I see no evidence that would explain your lapse in memory. And Two also says, well, what about you? Why don't you remember what happened? Seven doesn't know. She's completely clueless as well. No. She remembers
the campfire. She does remember the campfire.
She also has the same lapse in memory at this point.
Yep.
And now the question then comes out, why do they still call you Seven? Von Armstrong 2 asks Seven.
Yes.
It says,
why don't you use your human name? Your real name. And exactly. She's like, nope, I chose to keep my Borg designation because my childhood name.
Former name was not appropriate, is what she says.
Because I was a kid, basically because she was a kid and she really doesn't have memories. Like guys were adults.
When they were assimilated.
Correct. So they have much bigger memory files, if you will.
Then we have some interesting dialogue between 3, 7, 2, and 4. 3 says, well, I can't wait to use my real name again. And 7 says, well, there's nothing preventing you from doing so. Mm-hmm. And 2 says, well, except that most of the time, I don't know whether my name is Marika or Pachan or Lance or these names, these memories, they're all blending together. And they all believe that it's hard for them to really share a real emotion or have a real emotion because of the fact that they are all interlocked together, that it's not a true individual emotion.
Yeah,
it's almost like a shared emotion.
Really feel in this scene the kind of confusion and the pain, how difficult it is that it's just the three of them. Like Seven said in sickbay, with millions of us, it was white noise. And so it was comforting, but this is too small a collective, the three of to just be one of three. And they don't feel Borg because that would be millions and they don't feel human, which would be, or an individual. They don't feel that. They're nothing is basically what they say.
They're in between two worlds, right? So they're not Borg. They're not individuals. They're right in between. And this is why these three are tormented.
Yeah.
You know, they want to get past this. They want to live life the proper way.
Yeah.
We then jump to a very fun scene, and Robbie and I both agree that this is probably the best scene in the entire episode in Janeway's ready room.
Voyager still docked. We see the ship still docked, and then we hear her say,
she says, a friendly game.
and
it shows Paris with a black eye.
Yes.
Harry Kim has a cut lip, and then Paris says, well, that's how it started. And so evidently you and I were checking out the station.
Yes. Tom and Harry are bruised up. Janeway says something like Paris has this excuse of, well, we were trying to culturally exchange. He has this long, and she's like, skip the recruiting speech. You were looking for a bar.
It's like, we were. So basically Kim says, Yeah, we found a bar. We met a pair of Kimbori who told us about this game that they play with these big, funny looking rackets. And then Janeway goes, you mean one of those? She points behind and we both look back. And in unison, as a duo that we are, we both say, yeah. And I thought that was good. We timed that well.
Yes, exactly. We did.
You owe me a Coke. And then Paris says, well, in any case, they challenged us to a game. We accepted, but I guess we weren't really aware of all the rules. Janeway goes, because you were drinking. And Paris says, yes, ma'am. You see, we thought it was a version of tennis, but as soon as we hit the first volley, the Kimbori
hit it to us, and then we hit it back to them. And then they came jumping over the
net and they attacked us.
And started fighting. And then we thought fighting was part of the game. And then we're fighting and it was a disaster. She's like, you both are confined to your quarters for now.
Yeah, but it wasn't just us. When she reads it, because Kim says, well, things got a little out of hand. And Janeway says, a little out of hand. 7 Voyager crewmen, including 2 bridge officers, along with 13 Kimbori and 1 Morphinian cafe owner, all arrested. So this is a huge to-do.
It was a brawl.
Basically, it was a riot / brawl that began because of Paris and Kim. So we are confined to quarters after we go to sick bay to get fixed up. And I just love, that's such a great ending little tag where
she stops us as we're leaving.
Did you win? Paris says, oh yes ma'am. So you got your yes ma'am in. And then Kim says, we kicked their rackets, which is a nice little dialogue there. And that's, we're dismissed. Cute. Yeah. But again,
so we head out.
Good scene.
Very good scene. We head out. Seven comes in.
Yes, that's right.
And she tells Janeway they still have a gap in their memories. Maybe the collective didn't want them to remember. You know, they sort of speculate on like, why can't they remember? What is this missing gap in time? Maybe the collective didn't want them to remember, but there's still three of them linked together.
Right.
And Seven says, well, what if I get linked with them? Maybe I can help fill in the gaps.
Right.
And, you know,
and they talk about the dangers of maybe she gets locked into this triad, which then will become a quartet, basically.
Yes.
Where that she can't get out of it. And Seven says that she feels not compelled, but she feels almost, what's the word I'm looking for? Indebted to,
something like that.
You know, where she feels, she feels like this is part of her duty
to help these former drones. She wants to help them.
Exactly.
And Janeway says at the end of the scene, she says, there's an old saying, Seven, blood is thicker than water.
Yep.
Sometimes for friends, we're willing to, you know, go above and beyond and do things. That's I got to comment on two things in the scene. Yeah. One thing is the lighting seemed very different in a ready room to me. I don't know what it was, but it seemed
from
very
other episodes?
Moody.
Other
episodes. Yeah.
Okay.
But it was nice. I liked it, but it seemed, and then I thought, well, why is it different? Oh, but maybe because we're at the space station. But then I started thinking through the logic and I was like, the outside, when we've seen the ship docked, we know where the bridge is and the ready room is on the right side of the ship, or at least would face that way. We should see out the windows of Janeway's ready room,
the station,
the space station. And we didn't.
We don't see the station.
But maybe they were lighting it like it was around the corner, but it would have been cool.
Yeah.
I feel like that was a missed opportunity. You could have seen out the windows of her ready room, the space station out there, and had some cool different lighting.
So, yeah. Agreed.
Anyway, the lighting sort of threw me and it led me down that rabbit hole of why? Oh, yeah, there could have been that. So,
yeah.
Anywho, next scene, we go to the hallway.
Yeah.
This is Naomi catching up to Seven. This is where I noticed that low angle, I think. It was like she was so short. Seven was so tall. But she says, Naomi says, you know, I heard about these drones. And
do they hurt you? She's concerned.
Yeah, she's
Seven
concerned.
Says, I'm not damaged. Yeah. They're seeking information from me. I'm uncertain whether I can help them. And Naomi is like, well, be careful. And then out of the blue, Seven looks at Naomi and says, Naomi, do you consider me to be family? Mm-hmm. Naomi says, well, yes. Is that okay? And Seven's like, I have no objection. And Naomi goes, do you think of me as family? And Seven says, yes. So it's a cute little scene right there between those two.
And you see Seven is starting to understand this blood is thicker than water saying that, you know, that friendship and connection and all of that is really growing for Seven. Yeah.
She's starting to get it
on Voyager. Yeah.
We got a captain's log supplemental. She says that Seven of Nine has decided to undergo the procedure that will link her mind with the other drones. Despite the risk involved, she feels an obligation to help these distant cousins, is how she says it. And now we're back in Cargo Bay 2, and the doctor is also in Cargo Bay 2.
Yes,
he's going to monitor.
The beginning of the scene was funny to me, though, because
how?
The doctor and Seven were standing in the foreground looking at each other.
Yeah.
And as we cut into the scene, all of a sudden the drones, it was like, they were in a football huddle and it was like action. And they just started walking, spreading out. I was like, what were they doing that suddenly they, at this particular moment, they decided they have to start walking just as the doctor starts speaking. It would have been better if they hung out together for, you know, a little while and then drifted. It just felt a little like blocking to me.
Yeah.
That first scene.
Oh my gosh.
The first moment of the scene. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, he says he's going to monitor, but he may not be able to help her. He may not be able to do anything.
Right. He's concerned. He's concerned.
But she's good with it. She steps over. I love this moment of ready. You know, they kind of one after the other line up and turn and step into their alcoves.
Yeah. And my note here was like, that's why we have extra alcoves for this episode.
For this episode. Yeah. Yeah. I've always wondered, why do we have so many?
We don't really need that many alcoves. Exactly. So now we have a flashback back to the planet's surface.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. And the crash, the fire. There's a sound. Then we kind of roll through all the stuff we've seen so far with a crash, but then we hear a sound, and Seven starts walking away from this fire alone. And it's beep, 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 kind of beeping sound. Mm-hmm. And she finds this injured drone.
Yes.
All by himself. Yeah. And he's bleeding.
Yeah.
And there's a really, you can see the fear, and like Seven is really emotional. And the drone is dying and looks into her eyes and dies while he's looking into her eyes. And you can see her just freaking out and very emotional. And she comes back, she returns back to the fire. And that Borg, I guess they had a like an emergency beacon or something.
Yeah, yeah. Four of Nine says, the collective has located us. A Borg vessel is on its way.
And you see this object. It's like a suitcase. It's got lights on it and it's beeping in the foreground.
Yeah. Seven says, we'll be one again with the Borg. And two, Von Armstrong says, nope, I do not want to rejoin the collective. And four is right there with two. Four goes, agreed. Seven is like, that's a violation of protocols. Three is like, forget the protocols. You're not a drone. You're a person like us. You have a name, a life. All you have to do is embrace who you really are. And Seven's like, no, I don't exist without part of the greater group, the collective. I'm that is who I am. And this goes on for a little bit back and forth until two picks up the communications beacon and just destroys it, throws it on the ground. Yep. You know, he's like, you know, this is not going to happen. And Seven is Seven responds, error, input failure.
Yes. Input error.
Yeah. And she's not happy.
Now we kind of have a little bit of a montage here of like Seven left alone. She's pacing around by the fire.
Right.
She's getting herself wound up.
Because they've all left. Remember, all left. Three have said, we're leaving. If you want to rejoin the collective, hang out here. And Seven doesn't leave. Go ahead. She's pacing.
Yeah, she's pacing around. She doesn't leave. And then finally, she like starts walking into the woods, into the jungle.
Yeah.
And I think she finds four and puts and tubes into his neck and
into his, now this is important, the nano, she injects the tubules into his left side of his
That's neck, right,
because these nanoprobes are going to create a new interlink node in your left hemisphere.
So now, and she says this to him, right?
She says it while she's doing it,
while she's doing it. And then we see two kind of running or hiding behind a tree.
Yeah.
And when he came up and his arm went up on the tree, he has this cool mechanical.
Yeah, it went, it came open. And then, that was super cool.
That was pretty cool. That was a practical gag. That was very cool.
Mm-hmm.
But she does get him, assimilates him, or puts these nodes into his left hemisphere of his brain.
Right.
Does the same to three, and then ultimately makes all three of them state their name and their primary function. And they do now say to their primary function is to serve the collective.
Right.
And then she orders them repair the communications beacon.
That's right.
That they're going to rejoin the collective. They're going to wait for this rescue team. So then we go back to Cargo Bay out of this flashback, this memory that we've seen, and we see what happened, and she's the one that did it. Yeah. And they're all sort of yelling at her. It's like it's this shot of their faces. They're all up in her face and they're
two, three, and four.
Yeah. Blaming her. I wonder if they scripted all of this or if they had them just sort of improvising. I don't know. I doubt they had them improvising.
Probably not. Yeah.
But they were, the camera's whipping. And then finally Seven says, somebody help me. She yells, somebody help me.
Right.
And that's when Tuvok enters and the doctor says that they, what does he say? He says something like,
somehow they broke their link with Seven and they're malfunctioning.
Malfunctioning.
So he says, help me get them to sick bay. So now they are, so clearly they were not,
still conscious.
They're still in the alcove. So that image of them yelling at her is basically they're in her mind yelling.
Yeah.
At her. That's what I assumed. Right. So
yeah,
they weren't physically doing that, but they did break the link. They're malfunctioning. They have to go to sick bay. Mm-hmm. We now are in sick bay and the doctor is essentially informing, Seven that, once they broke that link, now they really, if we revive them, essentially, they're going to have a couple of weeks left of lifespan. That's it.
Yeah.
Because it's everything's broken right now. But we can save their lives if we reintegrate them and return them to the collective. Mm-hmm. And Seven's like, oof, yeah. You know, you can look the look on her face. Mm-hmm. She's not happy that this is what's going to, this is the other option. And the doctor keeps saying, but they'd be alive.
This is my job. My responsibility is to prolong their lives as long as possible.
Mm-hmm. And then we jump to the Astrometrics lab where Seven is still struggling with this decision. And Chakotay's there. And there's this huge conversation between Seven and Chakotay talking about what to do with these drones, you know?
So Chakotay says, why did you act differently when this happened? Mm-hmm. Like, why they had a certain reaction. They wanted to be individuals. Why did you not want to be an individual? Why did you want to stay part of the collective? And she says, she's starting to realize finally it's because she was assimilated as a little girl.
Yeah.
So her memories just weren't as deep. Like, she didn't have so much to draw on that was drawing these people to their lives, their names, who they were.
And also her memories were of being afraid as a little girl, correct?
And she says she panicked.
Yes.
Like when she started having memories of her childhood, she started panicking. And so she implanted these nanoprobes in their left hemisphere to create, to bind them back together.
So she wouldn't be alone, you know? Yeah, and a lot of that happened. I think the trigger was seeing the drone die in front of her. That drone dying in front of her caused her to just think about her own mortality and dying and being alone with no sound of any drones to comfort her. So that's what made her force the other drones to return to the collective. And Chakotay's like, well, you know, you were overwhelmed by feelings that you couldn't begin to understand. So you're not responsible for that. But Seven goes, well, because of what I did, now they're going to be forced to live the rest of their lives in the collective. So she feels, you know, a lot of guilt right now.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I find really interesting in this scene is she sort of reveals that she erased the evidence of doing this, of, you know, putting these nanoprobes in their left hemisphere, whatever. Mm-hmm. Her plan was to bind them back together and then not get caught. And this situation has caused her to have to remember and face some of those things. And Chakotay at the end of the scene ultimately says, a month as an individual or a lifetime as a drone, what would you choose? And that's, he leaves her with that.
Yeah.
Like, if you could have a short amount of time, but truly be yourself.
That's right.
Or a lifetime as sort of a prisoner, what would you choose? That to me, that's the heart of the episode.
Yeah.
I thought this was a nice scene too, between Beltran and Jerry. There was nice relaxed chemistry in the scene. It was nice to, it feels like the beginning.
I've
beginnings.
Never seen him that relaxed before. Cause he's sitting on the Astrometrics platform there.
Yeah.
Just kind of casually leaned over and
leaning
like,
on
wow,
his, yeah.
It's just not quintessential Chakotay.
Yeah.
It's very different. Very different.
But I liked it. I liked that scene a lot.
Yeah.
Then we go back to sick bay. This is where Seven returns. Yeah. She says survival.
We're in the doctor's office. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. She says survival is insufficient. Terminate this link. Let them be individuals.
Right.
And this is where the doctor says, you know, his responsibility is to prolong their lives as long as possible. And he asks Seven, he goes, are you doing what's really right for the others? Are you doing the best thing for them? Or are you just trying to alleviate your guilt? Now that you have finally remembered what you did and the fact you tried to hide it and all that. But she kind of comes back. She says, you know, doctor, once upon a time, you were a lot like a drone. You were stuck in the sick bay. Yeah. You couldn't get out. Your program is very limited in your experience.
Yeah,
but yet you were allowed to grow your program and explore your potential.
Yeah.
And she says in the scene, there's a nice connection between the two of them of, you know, only you and I can understand that, doctor, which being technological kind of characters, that's true.
Yeah.
You know, very true. Mm-hmm. We go out to space next, I think. Voyager's still docked there.
Mm-hmm.
And we come back into the mess hall and there are
with no lights, it seems.
Yeah,
it's very dark. Yeah. They're all standing by the windows.
Our three X drones are standing by the windows and it's quiet for a minute. And then three says, it's so quiet. And you start to realize, oh, they did it. They disconnected them.
And then four says, I had no idea you were going to say that.
Yeah.
I don't even know what either of you were thinking. So it's really, it's bliss. It's true bliss.
All three
for these
of them feel they seem like they're in bliss. It's a nice.
They love it.
I was actually moved by this moment where they were.
I mean,
discovering their individuality for the first time.
Yeah, they got 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks max, and they know it. They know that this is the end.
They've
of
They've been
line.
Told that. Yeah,
they know that, but they are absolutely in a state of just, like I said, bliss. I mean, there's nothing else to explain it. They're so happy that they're like that. And everyone says they're off. Two says, I'm gonna go see the space station. I'm gonna meet new people. I'm gonna fill my life with life again. And in the time that I have left, four says, I'm leaving also. I'm going to an uninhabited planet, only a few light years from here, but I'm gonna spend my final days in nature, out in the open air.
Outdoors, yeah.
Yeah, outdoors. That's all. He hugs three, turns to seven, and he says, you know, my people don't believe in grudges. We don't hold grudges. So I wish you well, seven of nine. And seven says, thank you. Four leaves. Three turns to seven and basically says, we realize she's Bajoran, right? So she says, it's nice to be on a Federation starship again, because she also served as a Starfleet crew member in engineering.
She wants
the Excalibur, right?
She wants to stay here on Voyager.
Yeah. And
seven she says to Seven, though, I know I can't forgive you.
Yeah.
But I understand why you did what you did, which is a nice kind of, it's a sense of understanding of why Seven did what she did.
Yeah.
And by the way, there was the hug with four. I feel like he's the younger one.
Yeah. The hug between four and three, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was that.
Yeah. He hugs three and then turns to seven and then leaves afterwards. What about?
Yeah. It was very emotional to me. I just found that moment to be, just to kind of get a sense of what the experience would be for these characters.
Exactly.
I really liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Had a lot of heart in it. Mm-hmm. We go to Astrometrics for our last scene, and there's Seven working away as she does. Naomi comes in and wants to hang out. And basically she says, I just want to spend time with family.
Yeah. Well, Naomi says, I thought you might like some company. And Seven asks why. Naomi says, well, because of what happened with these drones. And Seven goes, well, I see that word travels quickly. And Naomi says, small ship, but I thought maybe you might just want to spend a little time with some family. And
I felt like this last scene, because the last image of the episode is Seven, we're behind Seven and Naomi. Seven steps over to the console to start working, and Naomi just steps up beside her, shoulder to shoulder. But I wish that we had stayed on that image for a minute and then cut into a tight shot of Naomi's hand going over and just grabbing Seven's hand and holding her hand. To me, that would have been icing on the cake, to feel like Naomi knows that Seven needs some family love, and, you know, blood is thicker than water and all those themes. It would have been a nice detail, as opposed to, we were so far back.
Yeah.
It was pretty to look at the backs of them together, but it would have been nice to get in a little tighter.
Yeah, it would have been nice tag a moment to have that hand holding. I agree with
that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's your lesson from this entire episode? What are you getting out of this?
My lesson is the quality of a life and the freedom to choose your own life is more important than how long you live, to me. It's, you can live forever, but if you're miserable, like, what's the point? You know, I'd rather have true, authentic happiness and feel fulfilled and have a shorter life than to live forever and be miserable.
Mm.
That was kind of my lesson.
Yeah.
What about you?
Mine's more related to why this whole conundrum, why this whole situation even started in the first place, which is Seven of Nine's fear. And so the lesson really is not to let fear consume you, because fear does make you do things that are irrational, that can cause, you know, major issues like this. Like these three drones were linked against their will. And it happened because Seven let her fear overcome her. So really just keep fear in check and realize fear can make you do things that will ultimately be not a very good outcome. So
I like that.
Be careful.
That's great. Nice. Okay. My rating for this episode.
Yes.
I liked moments in this episode, but I got to say overall, it didn't have a lot of our cast involved.
Okay.
And to go back to my my rule of a good episode, it involves all of us. So I'm going to give this a 7.
Okay.
It's not a bad episode. It's just not as good as it could have been, I think.
Okay. I'm going to go higher than you. I'm going to go 7.5.
Okay.
I'm going to go 7.5. Yeah.
Let's see what our Admiral and Captain's average rating for Survival Instinct is.
Yeah.
7.3. Right in between us.
We're doing it again. Right between us. I like
That's crazy.
I like it.
Wow.
All right. I'll go with that.
Thank you, Admirals and Captains, for your ratings. I feel like we're all kind of between Garrett and myself and you guys. We're all in the same ballpark. Yeah. We're
getting close. All right. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in for this week's episode of the Delta Flyers. Join us next week when Robbie and I discuss the episode Barge of the Dead.
Ooh.
Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.